You're listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
Hey everybody, this is Ken Vellante with the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast, and I'm just so excited. I talked to a friend, Andrea Alton, and just she connects me with such the greatest plays, and in particular the Fringe Festival going on now in New York City, and I have three wonderful creators with plays in that. Susan Backner, Lauren O'Brien, and Jude Trader Wolf. Lauren, I got your show as Lolo's Boyfriend Show, and it's not just because of the title that I picked one, although I think it was just because of the title. Tell us about Fringe. Like, what the heck's Fringe? And tell us about your play in Fringe.
Well, the New York City Fringe Festival is such a magnificent opportunity for artists to bring new work to a really sophisticated, supportive audience and sort of spread our wings and test things out. I love it. I have so much appreciation for the people who are organizing it. Lolo's Boyfriend Show, I'm describing it as Reese Witherspoon meets Euphoria.
Okay.
And the little one-line pitch is, Lola's Boyfriend Show, a quirky young woman's disturbing and hilarious, if I do say so myself, crusade to find true love unwittingly leads her to find her true self.
I love it.
Yeah, you know what? I love it too. I actually did the Fringe Festival in 2020, and I won with my show at the time, Jackson Lolo, and which was actually about my friend's suicide. So, but we won with that show and the run was extended. And then of course we know what happened in 2020. So I started writing a book, which I always wanted to write, about dating in New York, because I've had so many amazing experiences and so have my friends. And I fictionalized it, but it's based on some truth. I sort of took the mud of my experience and created this new castle out of it. And I'll read you the little short blurb. Lolo lands a dream come true European tour with her punk cabaret show. But when it gets canceled after just a few weeks, she's forced to pack up her red platform boots and move back to her mom's house in suburbia. Lolo's psychic told her she'd be famous and happily married by now. Instead, she's stuck in her childhood bedroom, taking a wild and traumatic trip through boyfriend's past. From the yogi to the phantom texter to the S&M enthusiast, Lolo's penchant for attracting the bizarre really cuts her up. As she grapples with her ghosts and considers abandoning everything for a British beau, Lolo has a radical realization. Maybe, just maybe, she has a different path to happiness in this world.
Thanks,
so that's
Lauren.
Hero's journey. Thank you so much, Ken.
Yeah. I appreciate. I love, and even seeing the visuals and stuff. A lot of energy. A little bit of glitz there, and we'll talk some more about it. Suzanne Backner, conversation with my divorce attorney. I got to tell you that, you know, with the title, you know, I love the title, but I even have like a weird anecdote related to this. I was on a just uncomfortable moments in life because, you know, I'm vulnerable, like really uncomfortable ones. I was in Madison, Wisconsin at the time, and I was going through a divorce, and I was out, you know, dating at the time, and my date had ended up striking up a conversation with a woman I thought I recognized, and it was my divorce attorney that she was talking to, my date, and she said, "Well, what's the big deal I said, "Well, that's my divorce attorney." She's like, "Oh, I should have kept talking to her." So, you know, uncomfortable conversation with my divorce attorney. And I understand, Suzanne, even within casting and the mix here, There's some wild combinations in your play. Can you tell us about it?
Yes, I can. And thank you so much for having me, Ken. I love being with these two amazing women as well. There's like a little too much synchrotasticness happening because there are red platform boots in our show as well. Also, when I was going through a divorce, because this is a play is inspired by my real life divorce, I was in Madison, Wisconsin at one point with my tech director, who is an offstage character in the play. So there you go. And actually, my play Circle was running there, and we went to see it because that was all happening when I was going through this crazy divorce. And it actually is like we're right now, New York based artist, I believe, all of us. And you were in Oregon. So my play is actually East Coast, West Coast. It takes place in my divorce attorney's office and mostly, but then there's also in Los Angeles, but then there's also scenes that are in New York, and the main character is you know, very much native New Yorker who was divorcing in LA. So the story is really about love loss and never letting go and clinging on and not wanting to let go, which is very near and dear to my heart of experience, because it's really about a heartbroken kind of divorce. And divorcing person, you know, where there's alcoholism involved with her husband and where there is a lot of love and not a lot of acrimony per se, you know, which makes it a very murky territory. And it's a story that I really wanted to tell with my divorce attorney as that other character with the sort of me character. So it was always, I always was telling this as a dialogue between the two. And my divorce attorney in the play is played by my real life partner and, love of my life, Bob Brader, who is my partner in life and in art. So he's playing my divorce attorney, which adds like a little offstage layer of intrigue for us. My mother-in-law, when we first posted about this play, or I think it was when I kind of finished a draft and we posted about this, went absolutely ballistic and got not the right message that this was something artistic and not something that was happening. So we set her straight.
But, yeah. Oh my gosh. I'd imagine. So I talk a lot about that on the show. Something I realize is kind of like creating art and the artist, like space and persona that you can get into to present something, but it's something I had to realize for myself in inhabiting the role of an artist is that what you present is like, you know, it's from you, but it's like from you in a creation, you know, and it's always this kind of in the real world, it's tough to figure out for folks. Jude, I'm so interested in your play, Faster. I was just my recent episode I had with a friend of mine, Paige Stevenson. He's in tech, and you know, we were talking about the George Carlin routine. That's an AI routine, a 1-hour routine from the dead generated. I realized in the past a few days that on my podcast, because of the amount of content, audio content that I create, I can easily be duplicated, and I could create a podcast with guests, myself, in 6 languages, and for that meeting never to have happened. The tech exists right there. And so I was talking about Faster, like Faster and exponential growth in tech, and I was just reading about your work and just this vibe with it. Jude, really interested in your work. Tell us about Faster.
Well, Faster is you're on the right track there. Although talking about AI is even faster than what Faster is about, yeah. Because AI is just moving at such an incredible pace and changing everything. But it, you know, it's about the show is really about how technology is changing society and how it's changing our heads, the way we think, and that we don't. And technology is evolving so much faster than people actually evolve. people evolve very slowly, really. I mean, I'm a therapist by background. I'm a music therapist and a creative arts therapist. I'm an improviser. And so I work in the arts, and I always have. I've always worked using some kind of creative approach to helping people, you know, have a vision for their life and try to move towards it and tap into their own creative capacity, because I think that's how we change. And the reality is, I mean, it's not easy. Change is takes an effort. But the way technology is evolving so quickly, we're actually, I don't think mental health is really keeping up with it. It's creating a lot of demand, a sense of pressure, a lot of stress. And it changes society in very dramatic ways that affect everyone all at the same time. And we don't necessarily know that trauma is kind of impacting us on a daily basis and the way we feel in our lives. So that's the big broad sweep, but it's a comedy.
All right. we can exhale. All right.
Yeah. But the truth is, like, I've been telling stories about this theme for years on stage and, you know, different shows. And I use the lens of my husband. Oh, by the way, Suzanne directed my show. Suzanne, who's on this podcast with us right now, and helped me develop it. She's the person that's kept me accountable and kept me, you know, moving towards the goal of interweaving these two themes that I'm about to say, that I'm married to somebody whose approach to change is exactly opposite of me. Yeah. So he likes, you know, I'm take the leap and figure it out on your way down. He's a lots of looking, no leaping kind of person. Mm-hmm. I'm a, you know, let's try the road not taken. He says there's a reason no one's going down that road. We are the opposite. And yet we make it work, you know, for many, many years. And so for 37 years, we've made it work because there's a lot of love, even though there are those tensions. And the way we approach change opposite, I have found to be kind of an interesting way to look at how we can look at the pace of change is moving quickly. And how can we look at, we can learn to think faster. We can learn through, and I'm an improviser. So there's a bit about how the science of this, the way our brains can change. By the way, my husband and I sort of navigate being so different from each other, which is really us against human beings against the pace of change. That's the summation. Like, there's comedy, but there's this science basis to it.
Yeah, I wanted to drop in a little bit more there, Jude, and not for free therapy, but I do this show, and it gets a little bit ambiguous, I'm sure, but I do this, you know, so I started this show 5 years ago, and you know, my background is, I'm a labor guy. My day trade is I'm a labor organizer, and I've done that for a quarter century. I have a deep interest in art and in philosophy. And when I moved towards creating this thing, like, I had an idea. There were certain ideas I had at the beginning. Number one, that this was legit as fuck. Like I was going in. I'm like, this is not, you know, the joke about the guy with the podcast, even though I'm a 51-year-old white guy with the microphone, whatever. But, like, I'm going in and I'm making something. But also, I had also... two topics, art and philosophy, have affected me. I'm a sensitive person. It affected me profoundly. Ability to understand the world, the music, the songs they hold on to, performance, movies. And quickly the show evolved where, you know, I'm talking art and philosophy, but I added liberation. Like, if you ask me what the show is, I say art, philosophy, and liberation. And the liberation part for me just kept evolving, where it was like having conversations with folks about being yourself and living and speaking, you know, some truth through art, greater comfort with being who you are and need to be. And it is such a psychological component in the way that people come at art and say, look, Ken, I can't even live without art. So your question about, you know, art being around or not, it's not even, I can't even do it. In your work, Jude, I think there's such deep truth in art creation related to therapy. Could you just tell me, like, right now, is that something that's more widely felt about art and creation being a key to being healthier?
Well, I would love to say that it's more widely felt. I would say that it's, by me, it is very deeply felt.
Yeah.
And I started out, like I said, in music and using the arts, songwriting, and then theater arts, role playing, and then improv is its own thing, which is it is exactly about what you're saying. It's about the liberation of the self to make things up, to make rules and break rules, to be weird and find your weird. And I, as a therapist, I always encourage people, if you let yourself find your weird, you're going to find yourself out in the world being more yourself. And so that's my approach is always like, you know, find your weird, because then you've pushed the boundaries of whatever is controlling you. And then you're going to find yourself being more. And sometimes finding your weird means that you find something really artistic and creative that you want to share with people. But sometimes it's just for people to grow as a person. But the arts are at the heart of that. So sometimes I do a lot of storytelling coaching, for example. And so if somebody hears someone else's story about something they went through and they feel mirrored by that, they feel seen and they feel represented, that might inspire them to tell their own story. It might inspire them to just journal and discover their own creative capacity. But it's really about finding the energy within, because I think creativity is the energy of change. So when we tap our own creativity, we have the capacity to be more who we are. And that's really what you're talking about. And that's probably what, and I know Suzanne's work, and I'm getting to know, I'm going to see Lauren's work, I'm sure. I'm going to get to the festival and see it, that when you create a piece of art and you heighten and elevate a true thing about yourself, you might make comedy out of it, which is truly heightening it and making it weird, but that will translate to other people feeling connected. And the more people do that for each other, the more our world has the possibility of us being more free thinkers, right? Well, let's hope. Yeah. But that core creative capacity, that's what a creative arts therapist is tapping. And I think I'm always trying to get social workers to think about that side of things more than the diagnostic side of things, if you know what I mean, like the clinical.
Yeah. Thank you, Jude. That really spoke to me. I might have gotten free. I said I wasn't trying for free there, but you know, the weird. Thank you for saying that. Thank you for like just clearly stating that. Sometimes it's better to have it in words and succinct and to go with that. That's definitely a piece. All right, I'm looking over you, Lauren, with Lola's Boyfriend Show. I mean, is that what you dropping into the weird on that? What's that doing for you in the performance?
Absolutely. You know, it's so interesting listening to you speaking, Jude, so articulately about that. And like, I just feel this need. I felt this need to create Lola's Boyfriend Show almost like it was an affliction. And I feel sometimes being an artist, because it's a really difficult path. And I feel like there's this tension in our society that on one hand, artists are revered and looked up to, and on the other hand, they are kind of disparaged and it's looked at perhaps as a selfish profession. And I struggle with those two things. But this Lola's Boyfriend Show sort of like came over me like I said, like an affliction. And it was during the lockdown that I just started writing out these stories and then heightening them and playing with them and magnifying them and finding the hero's journey in these dating stories. And Lola, you know, there are definitely aspects of me, but she's not me. She's become her own character and her own persona. And it's definitely a weird, bizarre, magical journey that takes lots of twists and turns. And I play about 18 characters, what? Which is so much fun. And it's interesting, I think maybe from a therapy point of view, when I when I switch characters and I'll have full conversations between like two or sometimes three characters switching really fast. And as I switch the characters, my inner experience, my whole emotional experience changes. Like I feel the feelings of the characters and physicality, that's a whole psycho-emotional connection. Like when I change body positions, my emotional state changes completely. And sometimes just going into this different body position brings me right to the different character, right to their body state. I feel like I'm, you know, being a little nonlinear here, but what you're talking about from the therapy.
Have you listened to the show? The nonlinear, don't worry about the nonlinear.
I love nonlinear.
If you listen to the 8 days of content, which I do love and am proud of, don't worry about the linear aspect.
Excellent. So, but I feel like my compassion has grown for other people as I move into these different characters and physicalities and states. Because sometimes I think, oh, how could someone behave that way?
Yeah.
But as I'm actually playing a character who I might have judged before, I really understand where they're coming from. You know what I mean? And yes. The show, hashtag spoiler alert, that it starts out from this really fun, I think funny, lighthearted place. There's a lot of comedic elements and physical comedy and talking to the audience. And then my wish was also to shine a light on some darker aspects of something that I've struggled with and that other young women have struggled with, which is self-harm and self-hate. Mm-hmm. And really looking outside myself for validation and how that would trigger the self-hate and self-harm. So, through comedy and through this fictionalized journey, my wish is to like shed light, like shine a big light on something that a lot of people struggle with. And my wish, like my prayer for the people who experience Lolo is that it's a deeply healing experience for every single person. And that they're able to release things that they've been holding on to that they no longer need and call back parts of themselves that they might have lost along their journey, whether it's that creative part or innocent part or open-hearted part. So my wish is for Lolo's boyfriend show to somehow be really good medicine for the people who experience it. Yeah. And that's also how, you know, I've dealt with my struggle of calling myself selfish for wanting to even do this. You know what I mean? Like struggle with, you know, a lot of artists struggle with like, oh, who am I to want to bring this out into the world? And I'm playing all these characters. So it feels, you know, and then when I see the pictures, you know, the promotion is me playing these different characters in a million different outfits or Lolo changes according to who she's dating. So I'm like, ooh, is that like, am I some kind of egomaniac? but you know, my wish is for this to be good medicine and to free other people.
Yeah.
Did I say anything? Did that make sense?
Of course. No, absolutely. And, you know, and honestly, in talking about, you know, I think it's so, let me talk about like the vulnerability, not speaking for you, but like the vulnerability piece and you're talking about.
Yeah.
Important topics like self-harm and the angst, whatever form it takes, like this deep angst within us. And I think that I could feel when you were talking about that, those type of things, like I'm interested in like intellectually is like when people become different persons and they're inhabiting different spaces. But it goes back for me is why I, let me talk about plays just really quickly. Like I come at the arts like with a completely unique kind of like thread, nothing formal. I haven't performed in the arts per se or on a play. So I end up with kind of impressions and ideas that are powerful. And for me, it's like plays and performance and vulnerability. It's like for me, like stand-up comedians being on this stage, this live piece, it's right there, and it's like nothing else for me. I can't explain it. You're within it. And I think, you know, about the Fringe Festival, when I talked to Andrea Alton, love to Andrea, about, you know, the Fringe Festival and being like, what is this? And what are people, what's the new edgy pieces? Suzanne, I wanted to ask you something since I heard you directing there as well. Can you talk a little bit about like, or I'm calling you here. I'm over in Oregon. You're in New York City Fringe Festival. What's it like at the festival? What's it like working on these different projects? What's the vibe for you?
Well, first of all, if it's not plainly obvious, Jude Trader Wolf is just absolutely brilliant. So getting to work with Jude on her piece, you know, and having that kind of front row seat to these amazing ideas and synthesizing all of this that is her show that an audience gets to, you know, enjoy and take in and learn from and be affected by is just like has been such a wonderful thing. And it was a total coincidence that we, you know, that my piece and Jude's piece were both in the same festival. And in fact, we opened the festival in our venue, the 14th Street Y, back to back. So it was just this, you know, wonderful thing. And it's a magical space. It's just this beautiful theater. There was a monsoon on Wednesday night that Lauren, I'm glad you didn't have to deal with. But it's just, it was really a monsoon. It was crazy. You could hear the, you know, the rain beating on the roof, and it was very dramatic. But it was just sort of like the blast off, the kickoff of this whole festival in its sort of rebranding form of an April festival in these three amazing venues. And the Frigid New York, who runs these festivals, like this is, I mean, who runs this festival and sort of has relaunched in April. It was Frigid because originally it was in February and March for 17, 18 years. And it like this was such a, you know, kind of rebirth moment for the whole thing and post pandemic. My company was actually did pieces, a piece by me and a piece by Bob Brader in the first and second ever Frigid Festival before it was New York City Fringe. And swinging back to this beautiful thing that Lauren said, or not so beautiful, but a little heartbreaking as artists, that there's this sort of, can be this disparity between, you know, having work that you are wanting to share with your community and having this sort of pushback sometimes of, oh, you're just being a selfish artist, you know, kind of a phenomena. The Fringe did this amazing thing for these artists in this festival, which was they did ads on Times Square billboards, one for each festival, a minute long. So our faces and our shows were on this massive Times Square billboard, and they did a Bagel and Billboards event on the opening day, Wednesday. It was raining, but there we were, you know, name and faces in some cases in light. And it was just extraordinary because it just, you know, centered independent artists and celebrated us and celebrated us in community. And it was just so powerful and magnificent. It's just like such a, I don't know, inspiring and loving embrace and statement, you know.
Yeah.
That didn't answer your question, Ken, in any way.
Well, no, I've been lucky enough to get out to New York City twice within like the last 3.5 months, like kind of out of nowhere through opportunity and otherwise. And seeing the billboard, the faces, that's incredible. That's incredible. I mean, it's always incredible. And because it's a celebration, you know, and it's so big and cool looking. I mean, I was probably staring at the X-Men cartoon up there and there a couple weeks ago for about, you know, 10 minutes, and that got my attention. But it's big and celebrating independence and thematically and things, you know. Last year, oh gosh, maybe it was 2 years ago, had Brooke McCarthy, How to Be an Ethical Slut, or her performance. Yeah. And, you know, like I'm kind of awed because like, and again, it goes back towards the performance. I'm going to be like, how can you, you know, create this piece of art, you know, tied to personal, and talk about being lied to, having lied, sex, you know, like I'm looking in awe of like vulnerability. And I see that on the stage of where it's that tightrope. If to me on the outside of like, how do you do that? And for me, that remains the marvel and maybe the wonder, you know, as far as the person watching. Even I've watched some of the fringe pandemic times online, get tickets online. And I'm like, me and my partner, Jenny, we're sitting there like, hey, we're kind of at the theater. Like, like we're watching a play. We're watching somebody out there and it's them. And so lots of energy within that. But Suzanne, just about the fringe bit, just recognizing you're working on what, multiple plays then, or like how much you got a lot to do over there.
It's two, but I'm directing my own play as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and yeah, and it's just, I mean, it's just been a joy because we have such a wonderful, wonderful team who really like worked on this during the pandemic. Our projection designer, Chris Cative, and our two stars, Kat Nardizzi and Bob Rader, like we all worked on this as a group. And there's such a thread in the play about isolation and loneliness and opposing that, you know, intimacy and connection. So that it was this thing where we were, you know, all in our separate little spaces, because even though Bob and I were sharing a household, we were always in our like separate cells for working on this. So to be able to then go and put it on stage for the first time, you know, and have this team, the same team, you know, morph into, oh my God, we're on stage again, has been so amazing. And just the what the Fringe offers in terms of the opportunity and support and being part of, you know, an independent theater community in the city is just unparalleled. So, you know, I don't know that we would have been able to put it on in another way. And also to feel just supported artistically and, you know, that we could, you know, really create from the heart and not try to, you know, not trying to create commercially or create to serve this or that, or, you know, listen to this, you know, massive set of cooks busting into the kitchen, but to really be able to produce work that is, you know, whatever anyone thinks of it is genuine, authentic and from the heart and coming out of, you know, what I feel like is a real connected, collaborative process.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, do I have the timeline correct that a monsoon and earthquake kicked off the Fringe? Do I have that timeline correct?
Yep.
All right. I mean, you're really trying to get noticed out there. I mean, this is...
It's earth-shaking.
It's good. And it's good to talk. We got to talk about it right now on the podcast. All right, Suzanne, come on, have a go at the what is art question. What the heck's art? Why do you spend so much time creating this stuff?
Oh my God. That is an intimidating question to me because it just is. I mean, I think that there's sort of a genuine human need to express and to communicate and share. And so, I mean, I have like a less lofty view of like what is art or fine art, because I think it's really as simple as making and sharing things. So like sometimes when I have writer's block and I get intimidated or whatever, I actually don't say write it, go and write it. I actually say make it. I say to myself, go and make it. And I have a visual art mom who did not start until she was in her 40s. And actually her piece, I know that this doesn't help your audience because it's a visual reference, but I'm sitting in front of her painting, one of her paintings. So I just I mean, it was something for me that was encouraged when I was really little. And my, you know, I was an only child and an only adopted child. And so my parents would just be like, you know, write down my stories. I would illustrate them. So I actually was telling stories before I was literate. And like, I just think it's like every human is an artist. Every human is not going to call themselves an artist, but on some level, every human is an artist.
I love that. I love that. Lauren, what are you thinking?
I practice Buddhism, and the Buddhism I practice really focuses on the Lotus Sutra.
Yeah.
And the metaphor of the Lotus Sutra is that the lotus flower only grows out of a muddy swamp. It blossoms serenely above the mud and the muck and the, you know, the yuckiness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the whole idea of the Lotus Sutra is that we all have this potential for to bring forth our Buddha nature, beauty, eternity, happiness, true self, and we can bring it forth amid the realities of society. And I have a Buddhist teacher, Daisaku Ikeda, and is it okay if I read a quote from him?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
He says, "Life is painful. It has thorns like the stem of a rose. Culture and art are the roses that bloom on the stem. The flower is yourself, your humanity. Art is the liberation of the humanity inside yourself. Never forget for an instant the effort to renew your life, to build yourself anew. Creativity means to push open the heavy, groaning doorway of life itself. This is not an easy task. Indeed, it may be the most severely challenging struggle there is, for opening the door to your own life is in the end more difficult than opening the door to all the mysteries of the universe." That's Daisaku Ikeda.
I really appreciate you bringing, I've practiced Buddhism myself.
Oh, and really?
Yeah. I think, in the context too of, I studied it and it was theoretically in philosophy, but I was of a deep interest, art and psychology. And for me, Buddhism, the philosophy of Buddhism for me, just in my opinion, is actually just extremely deep psychology. Like the philosophy is, because the intent of thinking for me within the Buddhist tradition has this, idea that your improvement is towards salvation, that you're becoming healthier, that you're suffering unnecessarily less than you used to, with something along those lines. And I've been very interested over time in the connection between Taoism in as well, but and Buddhism and creativity. And just to tie this just from my own head back to some of Jude's work is, I've had a guest on a couple of times that for me kind of ties these pieces together. Her name's Susie DeVille. She's been extremely influential on me, and I'll tell you why. She did a book called Buoyant, okay? And it's about living that way, and not in a foofy type of way. It's about living that way, and she describes her transformation. I think she was in her 40s, her Holocaust, like nuclear kind of Holocaust type scenario, money, divorce issues, the down economy and everything, and her coming through that. And when I first contacted her, for me, some of the language she used seemed very like corporate, maybe like business type of stuff. And I'm a labor guy. I'm like, how does this meld with my mindset? But it's about productivity. And what she does to all the folks, me, I'll be in the class. She does a class. A lot of folks feeling burnout. What am I doing? What's this? How the hell does this art help me finish my gosh darn accounting work or whatever? But she goes into deep creativity, working slower. And saying, if we're not doing it for some of the things that we find through creativity and letting ourselves out, we're dying rapidly. I mean, it's that stark for her. So she's had a profound influence on me. And it's like the thinking of art and creativity, business, she uses entrepreneurship. I don't know that stuff. But like all these pieces about being productive in a modern way, but not the faster, not the out hustle, not the extra side gig that we're all kind of like, how do we manage all that? So a really deep effect. And I appreciate, Lauren, you mentioning the Buddha's had a very powerful effect for me over time on living, trying to live. Jude, what about art? What is art? I mean, we're talking about it and it's got a crucial role for you, but what are we talking about?
Well, I will say it's an affliction. No, I'm just in a homage to Lauren. it's to an art. Okay. It isn't really, it's a gift, but it's an affliction that turns into a gift, that turns into transcendence. And it's our capacity for transcendence. This is how I see it. It's our capacity to transcend this material struggle, this all the stuff that we go through. And I love this quote. It's Kierkegaard. I'm not going to say it exactly correctly, but he says that life can only be lived forwards. Life has to be lived forwards, but can be understood backwards. And yeah. I think that art is about understanding backwards, even if backwards is yesterday. And you write it in your journal. It's that through art, we understand what has happened so that we can live forward. And we've done it. I mean, human beings have done this since forever, since drawing on caves and telling stories around a campfire, making music, going on and on. And now we do these ever more sophisticated expressions of this part of ourselves that is capable of designing a spaceship that goes to Saturn. That's discovered oat milk. Those are all creative. Making a paperclip, taking a piece of metal, forming it into a paperclip. That's a creative act. You know, it's taking something and making it into something else. And art is about our humanity, and about taking what we go through and turning it into something transcendent. And I believe it's so that we can live, so that we can. And I, just speaking to what you were just sharing about this writer, so that we can move forward. And we have to, we're constantly challenged to let go of what is over, and move into what we want to become.
Yeah.
And that is all the creative process, but we need each other. We need help with that. But artists are leading the way. I mean, we don't often get credit for it, but artists lead because of that's what I mean about the affliction. So Lauren, I get it. I get what you were saying about the affliction. I don't know if Suzanne shares the affliction piece, but I will often suffer so much. And I feel so narcissistic about it that I'm even saying that. I'm like, oh, poor me. I feel compelled to write something, but you are compelled. And your life is terrible if you don't do it, and doing it is also hard. So they're all, but if you don't do it, then you can't live. So, artists are out there living that disconnect between, or the gap between what is and what is becoming. So that's my take. Does that make sense? What art is?
Yeah.
I love that. I love that, the disconnect between what is and what is becoming.
Yeah.
There's a gap there, right? That we fill, you fill with something interesting. You fill with comedy. You fill with ideas and play with them. And I will say, final thought, as an improviser, because I'm an improviser. In fact, that's where I'm going right after here, is I'm going to be in an improv show. Improv informs the way I live and informs the way I think about everything. And I teach about improv to lots of different kinds of professionals in mental health, in healthcare, in education, everywhere. And why I think it's important, and it just kind of speaks to this question about what is art, because improv is an art form that happens in the moment. There's no piece of music or piece of writing or painting or nothing is left. The art is achieved in the moment, and then it's over, and you sweep the scene and you do a new scene. So the art has an impact, but it isn't something that you take. It's something that happens inside the person doing it, and it's something that happens inside the person watching it. So it's very much about changing who we are by doing it. But the actual piece of art is over. It's happening in real time and then it's done. And that is the essence to me of, like, if we tap that piece that we can be transformed and we can be changed by having experience, that's what art is.
Hot damn. I've been over 260 episodes. I recently discovered that I have sound effects on my thing. I don't mess with it. I let my producer do it. And I've been waiting, and I'm 260 episodes in, and I'm still afraid to use the chimey bells and drums and stuff. Like, you hit it there though, Jude, just so you know, I didn't hit the button, but you got it there. I want to tell you one thing, because I just have to share it with you from the Susie DeVille thing, because I had such a... All right, so imagine... So put your mind in this kind of frame, all right? So think about the ocean, and think about in Australia, you know, there's big waves down there, right, that come up on the shore, a lot of surfing. And... the reason why there's these waves of this magnitude, Susie explained, is called the bathymetry of the ocean floor. And then what she talked about was, look at our bathymetries as humans, right? We got jagged pieces inside. We got the breakups and the angst and where did dad go and negative experience and all these things within us that create these ridges and elevation. But the idea is that, yes, those are significant and they're so tough at times, but the idea that our particular bathymetry as a surfer, that creates the highest rise of the wave, that the wave hits the bathymetry of this, of our, what we feel our jaggedness, and we are higher on that wave going into the shore because of our particular bathymetry. So what it taught me was, like, less on the what we are, the constituent parts that made us, like we want to be whole and feel things like that. But what about the magic because of those jagged pieces that creates that wave that we're on at top as creators, as somebody's doing? And for me, I was like, oh shit, Susie, I think I got that one. That really sank in for me, is less angst over the jags inside and more like, how high am I going to get on that surfboard? You know? I don't know. I love that one so much. I just had to say it out loud. each one of you, I got to ask you, in particular about the finding. We're going to be releasing this show as the Fringe Festival is going on. I'm going to ask each one of you just kind of tell some of the details of your show at the Fringe and maybe things upcoming, or, you know, and where to find you, you know, talking about finding the show and finding you. Suzanne, about your play and conversation with my divorce attorney. What's shaking right now?
Well, we have four more shows in the Fringe, and you can find all the information on conversationswithmydivorceattorney.com. And that's what I'm really focused on. But we actually do have some shows coming up in May of my play, The Good Adoptee, and that's at thegoodadoptee.com. We're going to Connecticut for Mother's Day weekend with the show with our kids, and we are also going to Chicago with Foglift on the 17th, 18th, which is an event for adopted people.
Wonderful.
And the community.
Wonderful. Great fortune in that. Jude, where do people find the stuff right now? Fringe, what's going on right now, and what's coming up for you?
Okay, well, I have two shows coming up in the Fringe. They're Friday, April 12th, and Saturday, April 13th. Those are two remaining shows. And people can find out full information about me and other shows I'm doing. I'm doing some shows in New York City. They may be live streamed. Or just, I host a storytelling show on Long Island. It's called Mostly True Things, but you can find all of that at lifestage.me. That's my website of my company. I don't have Faster coming up after the Fringe because I wanted to do this version of it and see how it plays and how it goes. Yeah. But I'm always adding things to lifestage.me, online classes and shows and workshops.
Thank you. Sounds like an absolutely fantastic resource. Appreciate that. Lauren, all right, what's shaking? When's showtime? What's going on near future for you?
So Lolo's Boyfriend Show has two more shows at the New York City Fringe Festival. Thursday, April 4th Friday, April 12th at 7:10 p.m. and Sunday, April 21st at 4:50 p.m. at the 14th Street Y. And then we're going to have a performance in June in Garrison at the Depot Theater. And the wonderful director, Christine Bacor, and I are determined to have a longer run of Lolo's Boyfriend Show in New York City and share it and around the world and share it with as many people as possible.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and on my social media, we're building the website for Lolo's Boyfriend Show, but you could find information. My Instagram is Lauren O'Brien Music, and my Facebook is Lauren O'Brien Music Poet, and my TikTok is The Lolo Show. So please connect with me there.
Wait, we're talking music and poetry as well?
Yeah, I fronted a rock band for a while, and yeah, I had a
collaboration.
Yeah.
Of course you did. What type of rock band? Come on, tell me.
It was kind of like Patti Smith meets the Smashing Pumpkins.
I can dig that.
Because I wrote poetry and turned them into songs and screamed and jumped around and got to like express my rebellious rock and roll soul.
Yeah.
So I have a couple albums, Inconsequential Dream and The Devil's Girlfriend.
Well, thank you for mentioning those. I'm one of the things when it comes to the creative human, I end up with, I think a lot of times it might be like a very different perspective is trying to like get into things because what I find with artists, particularly musical artists, when they get on the show and stuff, they're on this like docket of like, you know, I'm doing seven of these things and which track's the most important, which one was your most heartfelt or, you know, like legitimate questions, but, you know, routinized. And then sometimes when it drops in my show, something rather than nothing, it's a variety show. We can talk about anything. And I'll be like on there and be like, hey, what about that? You know, if it's a good book, something that they don't want hidden or whatever. I mean, I saw you wrote this book that was fantastic 14 years ago. You want to talk about that? You know? So it's great to hear all your creativity. I want to let you know I'm going to try my very best to come in contact with all your work the best way that I can. And this special episode of Something Rather Than Nothing dropping here as Fringe Festival is going on. Couldn't be more pleased to have the opportunity to talk to Jade Trader Wolf, Suzanne Backner, and Lauren O'Brien, and just kind of sit down together, throw this, you know, talking art, talking about your creations. But I really am excited by the work that you do and this conversation. And really appreciate your time. And for the audience, Fringe, like if you're looking around and the world feels a little bit boring or you're tired of that BK commercial or you know, like get a ticket if you can get access, or you know, the Fringe, the art, you can jangle your brain a different way for the day. And that's what I do. So
could I share one more thing?
Of course.
Yes. A lot of the shows have the option to stream.
Thank you.
So wherever you are in the country, you could stream a lot of the shows. I don't know. Lolo's Boyfriend Show has a streaming option for people who can't attend. So I don't know if Jude and Suzanne.
Yes. Yes. Well, our shows are being, I think all their, I think they're all being streamed. Yeah. People can watch from
anywhere. Wonderful. So folks, yeah, make sure you check out the website. Best of luck. I'm so excited to be in the midst of Fringe on the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast. Great talking with you. And gosh, give me a lot to think about. Thanks for what you create, your courage. Shit, talking about important stuff too. I got to really thank you for that. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having us, Ken.
Thank you, Ken.
This is Something Rather Than Nothing.
And listeners, to stay connected with us and our guests, visit somethingratherthannothing.com. Join our mailing list for exclusive updates and access to guest-created art. If you enjoyed this episode or any episode, please like, subscribe, and leave a review on your podcast platform. People really read that shit. Your support helps us reach more listeners and spread our community across the planet. This is a global show, and we like to give a shout out to our many listeners across the world, including many listeners in Canada, Spain, Germany, UK, Argentina, Brazil, India, Thailand, and so many more places. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Something Rather Than Nothing Podcast for behind the scenes content. And the best way to help the show is to tell your friends about us. If you love it, they'll love it too. Tell your friends who love it. We love you. This is Something Rather Than Nothing Podcast.